meetings in Chicago.
Okay. Zoom now has this obnoxious thing where it tells you recording in progress. So now we've heard it twice. Anyhow, this week's parasha is just chock full of great stuff. Balotcha is just really marvelous, and it bounces around, and it represents the end of an era and the beginning of an era, and I'll explain what I mean. If you look at the first 10 chapters of Sefer Bamidbar, which constitute Bamidbar Naso and the first part of Balotcha, you see an absolute celebratory text. There's time after time that we're counting and aligning and taking a census and putting them in order and saying everybody's name 14 different times. It's really beautiful, and it culminates with the census, with the offerings that the Nesim bring. We read at the end of Naso, it was the second half of Naso, and then in Balotcha we get all the preparations for travel, and the camps are ready to travel, and Moshe comes up to Chovav, and we've talked in the past about who Chovav is, probably his brother-in-law, and he says, please come with us. And Chovav says no, and then Moshe says, please, and in the end, we find out that he actually did come with them, with us, and hence the story of Yael and Chevar HaKeni. And it's great, and then suddenly there's kvetching, and there's complaining, to the point where Moshe Rabbeinu not only threatens to quit his job, he actually asks God to kill him. Those are the words he said, Horgeni Naharog, right? Which anybody who's been in a position of leadership understands that frustration. And then the whole parsha culminates with Miriam, Aaron, Sarat, it's all icky. And in the middle of that, at that break point, there is the famous parsha of Vayibin Saron of two psukim, bounded by two backwards nuns, that, as Chazal tell us, indicate that that parsha really belongs somewhere else, and that it was put there in order to sort of buffer between punishment and punishment. But the simplest read of it is, the way Rabbi Soloveitchik explains it, is that really history was supposed to march forward. And at that point, Israel was supposed to march, and they were supposed to take the Aron out and go to war and conquer Israel, boom, boom, boom. And then because of the events in the second half of the latter half of the parsha, really the last third of the parsha, and then going on from there through Sefer Bamidbar, of the complaining, the rebellion, the different rebellions, the attempts to go back and everything else, everything fell apart. And so we're really reading the end of an era. The era is an era of a year in which we were at the foot of Har Sinai, and even less than a year, because for the first part of that year, we were at the foot of Har Sinai and we were shaking in our boots, and then we were worshiping an eagle. So that wasn't good. But the rest of that year was really glorious. We're building a Mishkan, collecting, building a Mishkan, putting the Mishkan up, dedicating the Mishkan. It's all very exciting. And you really hear John Philip Sousa in the background, because one of the things we read about in this week's Parsha, of course, is the making of the cornets, the silver cornets. So I know it wasn't a sousaphone, but close. And then suddenly everything changes and things get miserable and upsetting and wrath, etc. So we read the end of the era of celebration and the beginning of the era of tribulation. But when we're still in the good part of it, we have this interesting parasha, which is source three. So we're going to start with source three. We're going to go back to one and two because they're vital for understanding it. But we, and I put them there because they're earlier in the Torah. But source three is we're going to start, and it's in our parasha. Bnei Yisrael have left Mitzrayim. Bnei Yisrael have come to Har Sinai, have gotten the Torah. Bnei Yisrael have camped at Har Sinai, and they've spent the good part of the winter collecting materials, fashioning tools, and fashioning appurtenances and vessels, and constructing the Mishkan, and then the Mishkan is constructed. And at that point, so God speaks to Moshe in the first month. We assume it's at the beginning or near the beginning of the first month. It has to be at least in the first 2 weeks of the first month, as you'll see. Bnei Yisrael should do the Pesach in its time. When is that? On the 14th of the month, in the afternoon, I'm reading it the rabbinic way of Ben Harbaim, do it in its proper time. Do it like all of its laws. Now, of course, that's not exactly true, because the only time that we ever did this before was in Mitzrayim, and the laws included, don't leave the house, put blood on the doorstops and the lintel, portables and lintel. So it's not exactly that, but you're going to treat it as a korban, but otherwise it's the same. Vayaver Moshe b'nei Yisrael lasot haPasach. So Moshe told b'nei Yisrael to do the Pesach, and vayasu et haPesach b'rishon b'arba'asar yom l'chodesh ben arba'im b'mbar Sinai. They did it. Now, by the way, we are instinctively are not surprised. So look, B'nai Israel had Pesach. We know Pesach is supposed to be every year. We know that not only is it now the time of Pesach, but thank God we have a Mishkan that's up. And we've just finished dedicating it 2 days ago. So it's perfect. So we're bringing the Korban Pesach to the Mishkan. It's great. And this is what Pesach will look like forever. Instead of it being privately in the houses, it'll be a Korban brought to the one central location. Otherwise, it'll all be the same. We're not surprised by this. We're surprised by something else, but we'll see that in a minute. And now, Vahi Anashim, Asher Ayu Tmeim LeNefesh Adam. Some people were Tmei Meit. They were Tamei because they had contact with the dead. We don't know who they are. We don't know what dead person or dead body they had contact with. But that's what we find out. They couldn't do the Pesach on that day. So that means Bayomahu means on the 14th of Nisan they came up to Moshe and Aaron, and they said, we can't do the Pesach today because we're Tamei. We're Tamei mate. Lama Nigara. Why should we be left out? Which is a theme in Bamidbar. I've talked about it in the past. It's a theme that shows up here and shows up at the end of Bamidbar with the daughters of Tzlofchad and the members of Menashe. That same word, to be left out. Lama Nigara Libeltia Krivit Korman Adonai Moadova Toch B'nei Yisrael. Why should we be left out, not be able to bring the offering of Hashem in its time among B'nei Yisrael? So one of the questions I asked is, why were they so distraught about being left out? And it sounds like they feel distraught about being left out of something that everybody else is doing. Everybody's doing this Korban and we're left out. But is that enough for reason to come to Moshe and say, please find a solution? So now, Vayomer Aleihem Moshe Imdu Veshma Mayitzave Adonai Lachem. Now, by the way, we do not find anywhere else that people who are supposed to be involved in some sort of ceremony and for some reason can't come up to the leader and say, can we have a second chance or find us a solution? Either you can or you can't. If you can't, you can't. Maybe we won't hold you culpable. Maybe it was not your choice, but it was coercion, but you can't. And here they come up and say, we don't want to be left out. Find a solution. Moshe says, okay, let me see what God says. And God has a solution, which is very strange. So the other question I asked her is, why is Pesach the one offering that allows for a makeup? We all know what's going to happen here, but just pro forma, we'll read it. But So a person who is Tvei Mate, or he's very far away, and now or in generations, and Asa Pesach here means wants to do the Pesach. What happens? Let him do it on the second month in the 14th, meaning exactly the same time, same day, a month later. Right? And they should eat it with matzah and maror, which means just like the Pesach. Lo yashiru menu at boker. They can't leave anything over to the morning. Vatsim lo yishburo. Can't break a bone in the Pesach. In other words, the same laws as the Pesach, Rishon, apply here. Kechoch hukata Pesach yasu oto. All the laws of the Pesach apply here. Right? Now, by the way, laws of the Pesach, not laws around the Pesach, which means you could have a hamburger at the meal too with a bun. There's no chametz problem here. But the laws of the Pesach itself are the same, the Korban. If a person is Tahor and is not far away, which means they don't have either of the legitimate reasons for not bringing Pesach, and he does not do the Pesach, then that person is cut off. Whatever karet means, huge punishment. He didn't bring the Korban of Hashem in its proper time. He bears his sin. All right? And now, if a ger joins you and wants to do a Pesach, he can do a Pesach too. Now, the surprise there may be because his ancestors weren't in Egypt. What's he celebrating? The answer is when you become a ger, you become fully part of the nation. It's a theme throughout Bamidbar. One law for everybody, the stranger, the citizen, all the same. Okay. Now, that's the parsha. It's broken up into two parashot as it's broken up in the Torah. The first is the command and the challenge, the tension. And the second is the solution, the resolution to the problem. The problem is that these people can't bring Korban Pesach and they want to be included. And the solution is second chance, do over, what we call in Israel, Moed Bet. Second chance, take a test. Right? Moed Bet. It's very strange. I don't know if the university's got the idea from Pesach Sheni. I know it's not the reverse. But it's a very strange thing. So I'm gonna add a third question. Why does failure to participate in the Korban Pesach carry such a heavy penalty? There is no other ceremony that we have, save one, that failure to participate carries a punishment, and a punishment of karet. And the other one is, of course, Brit Milah. But there is no such thing as you have to bring a Korban Chatat. Didn't bring it, you get karet. You have to come Aliyah L'Regel and bring your korbanot. Didn't do them. Okay, you missed a mitzvah taseh. You didn't do a mitzvah taseh, but a punishment? Never heard of. Pesach, karet. And Pesach so vital that Hashem allows for a do-over a month later. So these questions are really, as you can see, folding into each other. What's so big about Pesach? But now I'm going to ask the third question, which seems to come out of left field. Let's go back to these psukim. In Shmot, in Parshat Bo, in chapter 12, when the Korban Pesach is introduced, and they do the Korban Pesach that night, and Moshe commands them about it, he says the following, verse 1, so now, Bnei Israel are in Egypt, and by the way, as far as they're concerned, they're going to be in their homes. There's going to be a plague. They're going to be protected from the plague. And at some later time, they or their children or their grandchildren are going to go back to Israel. They don't know that they're about to leave. And they're told, when you come to the land, keep this avodah, do the Korban Pesach, which makes it sound fairly clear that Korban Pesach should get regenerated in the land and then do a regular thing every year, but not in the intervening time, not next year in Egypt, and not the year after that in Egypt, not the generation after that in Egypt, or if you're on the way and it happens to be Pesach, it seems. Now, one last thing, and the truth is that we could bring all of chapter 12 for this, but just one pasuk, but it highlights something that we're all familiar with, is what was the Korban Pesach about? The original Korban Pesach was about what? So when the child says, Mavodazot Lachem, what do we answer? Zevach Pesach Hu L'Adonai. It's a Pesach offering to Hashem. Asher Pasach Abatei Bnei Yisrael B'Mitzrayim. He either jumped over, passed over, or protected. Two different ways to read the word Pasach. The houses of Bnei Yisrael in Egypt. B'Nogpo Et Mitzrayim B'Batenu Yitzil. When he plagued Egypt and he saved us. That's what it is. That's what we're celebrating. That's what Pesach is. Okay. But now I'm going to take that first pasuk and ask the question. We normally ask the question, why wasn't there Korban Pesach the other 39 years in the desert? It's a little unfair, really, the other 38 years in the desert, because they brought Korban Pesach year one before they left. Then they left the next morning. They now, as you see here, brought Korban Pesach year two, and they did not bring it again till year 41. We'll look at it. Why didn't they bring it in the meantime? So the Gemara answers what the Gemara answers, which is that they had Arelim in their families. They were people who were uncircumcised, and you can't bring the Korban Pesach if even a member of the family is Arel. Okay. And they were Arelim because as they traveled to Midbar, we'll see this in Yoshua, they couldn't do Brit Milah, it was too dangerous. So they couldn't do Pesach. But if you look at the Pasuk here, you can see the exact opposite point. You're starting from a position of saying they should have been bringing the Pesach every year. Why didn't they bring it the other 38? And I'm going to ask the opposite. Based on source number one, they shouldn't have brought it at all in the desert. Because it says when you come to the land, you bring the Pesach. So the question isn't the 38, why didn't they bring it? The question is, why year two did they bring it? That's what I'd kind of like to take a look at. And so we're now folding several questions together. Why does Korban Pesach carry with it a unique punishment? And the punishment itself is very severe, but the uniqueness is that there is any punishment for failure to participate in the ceremony. Remember, ceremonies are mitzvot taseh. They carry lo taseh. Korban Pesach is mitzvah taseh, but there's a lo taseh. Don't break a bone and don't bring it while you own chametz, etc. Fine, but it's a mitzvah taseh. Where do we ever have a mitzvah to say that there's a punishment for failure to participate? So brit milah on this. Why is Korban Pesach so vital that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed for a do-over? Pesach Sheni. Why were these people so distraught that they'd be left out of the Pesach that they ended up with a do-over at Pesach Sheni? And why was Pesach brought at all here? That's the question I want to ask. Interesting thing is that right after the Korban Pesach, Pesach Sheni is commanded, and this is a subset of the Cholent problem. I'll explain what I mean. We have a problem that a teacher of mine referred to as the Cholent problem, and that is when we finish Parshat Hashavu, we're hearing the Parsha in the morning, so that's the end of the Parsha. We go home, we have Kiddush, we have Cholent, we take a nap, we get up, we go to Mincha, and we hear the next Parsha. And in between the Cholent and the nap, we forgot where we left off. And so we don't see the continuity of the story between the end of the previous and the beginning of the next. And there's several Parshiot where that happens, where one Parsha ends somewhere, and it's really a bit of a cliffhanger. But Cholent makes it a little bit more calm, the nap makes it more calm, we come to Mincha, and we're starting fresh. We don't see the connection. Here we have a different problem. It's not a Cholent problem, unless there's a lot of Cholent to Chol. It's an Aliyah problem, is that this yellow line is the beginning of the fifth Aliyah, the fourth Aliyah. In other words, you end here, it calls somebody up, and depending on the Shul, you'll have 14 Mishaberachs, and you'll have announcements, and a Ben Gavra, and all sorts of other things. Then you start here, and we don't necessarily see the connection. So I want to show you the connection. Here's the whole story of the Korban Pesach, and the very next pasuk is, on the day the Mishkan was constructed, the cloud covered the Mishkan, and then there's a detailed description of the cloud leading Bnei Yisrael and covering the Mishkan. Why are these two things together? That's the next question I want to ask. Let's roll back and take a look at the events that are happening around this time. Bnei Yisrael left Egypt. They left Egypt. They wandered through the Midbar. They came to Har Sinai. They got the Torah. They were at Har Sinai waiting for Moshe to come down. The Egel, Nebuch, then there was the summer. And then during the course of the summer, Moshe is up and down, finally comes down. Shnei Luchot, Shniot, the two second set of tablets, the commands regarding the Mishkan. They spend the winter putting together the Mishkan together. They've been forgiven by God. There you have a new chance. And they spend the winter putting the Mishkan together. And finally, on the first day of Nisan, which is sort of the anniversary almost of leaving Mitzrayim, because it's the beginning of the new year, they construct the Mishkan. All right, and that's here at source 4. Hashem commands at the end of Shemot, on the first day of the first month of the second year, put the Mishkan together. Now, parenthetically, what did we read at the end of Naso? It was the second half of Naso. It's 89 psukim. What do we read there? We read about the dedication of the Mishkan. And the dedication of the Mishkan took how long? Do you remember? It was three aliyot, but how long did it take? It took 12 days. Why 12 days? Because each shevet, Levi is not included, each shevet brought the gift on their day. So the first day was Yehuda, and he brought a gift. The next one was Yisachar, etc. And go all the way through until finally Naphtali brings on the 12th day. All right, now I want you to picture the scene. Be there. What is happening at the foot of Har Sinai with the camp all established around the central Mishkan, which has just been erected, and we're celebrating its dedication with a teardrop hanging over a smile, as we remember that Nadav and Avihu have died. Keep that in mind. And there is this dedication ceremony that lasts 12 days. It's almost 2 weeks. So it's the 12th of Nisan, and we've just finished dedicating the Mishkan. And now what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Everybody has to bring Korban Pesach. When's that? Day after tomorrow. In other words, the first 14 days of Nisan are 12 days of dedication, a day off, Ki'ilu, and then everybody brings Korban Pesach. Now, I want you to see what's happening. For the first 12 days, each one of those days, there was one person bringing a Korban, one person from the whole nation bringing an offering. That's all. The head of Shevet Yehuda, the head of Shevet Yisachar, etc. That's it. On day 14, everybody comes. Everybody comes. It's been inaugurated, and now we're going to break it in. And how do we break it in? With Korban Pesach. So you're going to ask me, but didn't you just show us in Sefer Shemot where it says you're not supposed to bring Korban Pesach until you get to the land? Yeah, that's why here we needed a special command of Hashem to bring it, because we were supposed to wait. So why did Hashem indeed command us to bring the Korban Pesach? Because this Korban Pesach is actually part of what? It's part of the dedication of the Mishkan. Because what is the Mishkan? The Mishkan is God's presence, which is enshrined via the cloud that covers it and covers Bnei Israel and protects Bnei Israel. Go back to Pesach in Egypt. What was it about? It was about God protecting our homes, about this intimate relationship with God. And now you understand why people would be so distraught to be left out of that. This is the moment where every Jew says, I'm in. And now circumstances beyond your control say, you can't be in. You're Tamei. No, I can't. You can't leave me out. I got to be in. You know, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you're right. Next month you do it. You know, late entry. And you're in. Now, let's follow Korban Pesach in Tanakh, and you're going to see something interesting happen here. Sefer Yehoshua, I mentioned to you, the next Korban Pesach that's brought is brought 38 years later, in year 39 years later, in year 41, meaning 40 years to the day since the Korban Pesach in Egypt. In Israel, cross, the first thing is Hashem tells Yehoshua, you got to do a mass brit milah. They do the mass brit milah, and then after that, they do the Pesach. Why is this Pesach so big? Why is it such a big deal to do the Pesach? Because what are they inaugurating this week? They are inaugurating their presence in the land. They've just crossed. They crossed on the 10th day of Nisan. They do a Brit Milah, and then 14th of Nisan, Korban Pesach. They are inaugurating their presence in the land. Yehoshua. We do not hear about Korban Pesach again until the end of the first commonwealth. At the end of Sefer Melachim, we hear about a king named Yoshiyahu, who was the last righteous king that we had, at least in the first bite. Yoshiyahu. And Yoshiyahu went through a crusade, if you will, of obliterating all of the foreign worship places that were in Israel, all of the high places, the Bamot. Famous story with him going to Beit El and destroying the Mizbeach there. And after all of that's done and the land is cleansed, by Itzav HaMelech et Kol HaAm Lemor, Asu Pesach L'Adonai Lechem. Do a Pesach. Kakatub al Sefer HaBrit HaZeh. We have a Sefer HaBrit we just found in the Mikdash, the famous story finding the Sefer Torah. And it says in there we have to do Korban Pesach. Let's do Korban Pesach. Ki lo nasa ka Pesach hazeh mimei ha-shoftim asher shaftut Yisrael. Now listen to those words. A Pesach like this was not done since the times of the Shoftim. What does that mean? They never did Korban Pesach. Hard to believe. What he means is Kapesach Hazeh, meaning a Pesach that served a dual purpose. It served the purpose of doing Pesach on the right time, like we do every year. And it served the purpose of rededicating the Mikdash. Rededicating the abode of God and God's presence in the land. That hasn't happened since then. We then, in Divrei Hayamim, hear about a Pesach that happened earlier than that. That's a wild story. Chizkiyahu, who is Yoshiyahu's great-grandfather, also did a crusade to cleanse out all of the foreign worship and the high places, etc. And Chizkiyahu, we're told about this in Divrei Hayamim, sends messages throughout the land, including to the northern kingdom, and invites them to do Korban Pesach. Now watch what he does to do the Korban Pesach b'Chodesh Hasheni in Iyar. What's that? So if you look back a little earlier, you'll see that in the Northern Kingdom, they had deliberately switched the calendar to be different than us. Yeravam ben Nevat made a holiday on the 15th day of the 8th month to imitate Sukkot, but be different. And so what a teacher of mine once suggested is that what Chizkiyahu here was doing was trying to unite the people by striking a compromise. You come to our Beit HaMikdash, we'll do it on your schedule. But if you think about it, It works because the second month is a viable month for Korban Pesach, as we read in our parsha. This attempt at unified didn't really work, but there's a glorious Korban Pesach told about here. And then the last one I want to show you is when the temple is rebuilt, the Mikdash is rebuilt. And we find out that the first thing they do is Korban Pesach. And why is that? Because everybody had become Tahor. They had rededicated themselves to the Avodah. What do we see here? That Korban Pesach historically has been, besides a commemoration of Yetziat Mitzrayim, a re-experiencing of Yetziat Mitzrayim, it has been highlighted as a special commemoration and celebration at points where we are rededicating ourselves to the Brit, we're rededicating ourselves to membership in Klal Yisrael, and we're re-inaugurating the special place, the special abode of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the model for that is in our parsha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, even though you're only supposed to do Pesach when you come to the land, you just dedicated the Mishkan, bring the Pesach. Because the Pesach is your opportunity, and my, not just our own emotion, not just the leaders, everybody's opportunity to buy in, to put skin in the game, literally, to join and identify and become part of Klal Yisrael as the nation whose job it is to enshrine HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. It happens in the Mishkan. It happens the minute we enter the land. It happens when we rededicate the Beit HaMikdash. It happens when we, after cleansing it twice, when we rededicate the newly built Beit HaMikdash. That's what Korban Pesach is. And we see it in our parasha, and we see it perhaps most finally, meaning in a subtle way, when the very next thing that happens after the parasha of Korban Pesach is we hear about the cloud covering the camp. The cloud covers the camp because the camp includes people who have all bought in together to the job of Klal Yisrael in history, which is to enshrine HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. And so all of these pieces come together, and this really sets the tone for what Sefer Bamidbar should be about. And it is about for another chapter or so until everything falls apart, but that's, of course, a shiur for a different time.